home had wheels and aluminum walls. I shared that space with a mom who had a drug habit and a dad who liked to knock her and me around when he was home. I didn't have a lot, and what I did have wasn't anything to brag about, so I never asked your mom out. I never took a chance. His eyes were intent on mine as he kept talking. When I saw her again when she came back to town, the rumor had spread that she left school and had a baby. This is a small town, so it was no secret she was on the outs with her folks because the baby wasn't enough like them. By that time, I'd been on the force for a few years. I'd gone to college. I'd bought a home and had a life any man could be proud of. But I saw your mom, and all those old fears came back. I wasn't good enough for her, and there was no way I had anything impressive to offer her. I didn't deserve a woman like that because I didn't know what I would do with her even if she gave me a shot. My life was violent and ugly. That was the reality of things. I didn't know if I had it in me to be a different kind of man than the one I was raised to be. And that terrified me. That's shitty. We never talked much about his childhood, since so much of his focus had been on making sure I had a great one before and after my mom. It is shitty, but it turned out I wanted your mom more than I wanted to keep her safe from all the things I was scared of. I asked her out without meaning to, and almost had a heart attack when she said yes. I was already in love with her, so I was surprised how easy it was to be the kind of man she needed me to be. When things got serious, and she told me it was time to meet you, he stopped talking and had to clear his throat. I remembered every single time my dad hit me. All I could think about was how short-tempered and angry he was with me all the time. I'd always had a thing for your mom, but you were this tiny, innocent stranger that I was going to have to fool into thinking I was worthy of love and affection. I didn't think I could do it. All I could imagine was doing the wrong thing with you, screwing up, and having your mom leave me. And worse than that, having her leave me because I'd been right all along and I wasn't good enough for her. He gave me a pointed look that I could see clearly even in the dark. It was like he was looking right into my soul. I broke up with her before she could bring you around me. I left her with some lame excuse about things moving too fast. Lied through my teeth that I wasn't ready to be a daddy. Told her it wasn't her, it was me. All the stupid stuff idiotic men say when they know they are breaking a good woman's heart. I felt a frown pull at my face as the sides of my mouth turned down. I don't really remember that. I had vague recollections of my mom being sad after we were back in Lowry, but I always figured it had to do with my grandparents' ignorance and the mean things people would say about me when they thought she couldn't hear. Maybe there was a time before I remembered Jules being a part of my life when she had cried more than normal, but I was too young to have any clear memory of it. That's because it didn't last long. I realized pretty quickly that I was an idiot. Fear can make a smart man do very hurtful things, but eventually the heart wins out because fear is fleeting and love lasts forever. It took me 6 months to win her back and another 6 plus an engagement ring before she would let me meet you. She said she could handle me breaking her heart again, but there was no way in hell that she was going to let me mess with her little boys. She didn't need to worry. It was love at first sight with you, son. I took one look at you and knew I would do everything in my power to be the best dad I could be for you. I knew that what my dad had taught me didn't matter, that being a parent was something you could choose to be good at and could make the effort to get better at every single day. He didn't want to do the work. I did, and still do. It was my turn to clear my throat. You were the best back then, and if Dalen is anything to go by, you're the best now. You didn't have to keep showing up when things got hard. In fact, I don't think anyone would have blamed you if you'd bailed. Well, he probably would have blamed himself like I'd been doing the last 10 years, and that was a heavy burden to haul around. He chuckled, but there was no humor in it. You don't think I wanted to, Dash? I was a county cop in a small town with 2 kids that had just lost their mom. I lost the love of my life and didn't have anyone to turn to. There were times I would be on patrol and think about driving and driving until Lowry and everything that was here was behind me. There are nights I don't remember getting you kids to bed, and there are entire days I can't recall. I started doing stuff at work that had my bosses threatening to put me on a desk. I wasn't living for me, and I was hardly showing up for you kids. Thank the Lord Elmer was there, because there's a good chance I would have screwed everything up and lost you both. Again, I couldn't remember any of that. After Mom died, I was in my own youthful fog of grief and misery. I'd also had my hands full with a little brother that needed constant care and supervision. Plus, I was a new teenager and dealing with puberty that hit like a Mack truck. Sure, Jules had maybe been a little more distant, a little less affectionate than he typically was, but I figured that's how real men, how men like him, dealt with the loss of a loved one. It was Caroline who pointed out how much I had to lose. I brought Dalen in for a checkup. He was underweight. He needed his nails trimmed, and he had cradle cap. She yelled at me, told me that it was awful I'd lost my wife, but my son was still here. I still had the opportunity to hold him in my arms, and if I didn't get my head out of my ass, I was going to lose that. A soft grin touched his mouth as he spoke about his second wife. It was a wake-up call I desperately needed, because I had checked out, son. I was physically here, but mentally, he blew out a breath and pointed to the stars. I was long gone. He cut another look at me. I didn't want to fall for Caroline. I didn't want to love anyone else. I had my boys and my work, and I was happy with that. When she started to pursue me, I resisted. He gave me a look with a lifted eyebrow that told me without words he clearly remembered my resistance when he entered my life. I remember when Caroline was pulled out of school when she was initially diagnosed. She was a few grades younger than me, and I remembered thinking it was impossible for someone so young to be so sick. But like I said, love will always outlast fear. He didn't talk about being afraid like it was something to be ashamed of. He didn't talk about the fear like it was something that made him, or me, weak. He talked about it like it was a fact of life, and we had to learn how to live with it, and the hurtful things it made us do, just like we had to live with the fact we couldn't pick the person our hearts settled on. I loved her when I didn't want to, and I don't regret a minute of it. What I do regret, son, is the same thing you now regret. I regret the time that I allowed fear to steal from me. I regret every second, every minute, every hour I let fear keep me from your mom, all the way to when I was younger, up until when she let me back into her life. I regret every moment of time I lost with Caroline, because I was terrified of something I had no control over. She would have been sick with or without us, and I thank God every day that she got to spend the last years of her life with our family, because we were the only thing she wanted, and she gave us back everything we lost and then some. I felt a ball of emotion lodge in my throat. I had to blink my eyes because they stung. My hands curled around the arms of the chair so tightly, the plastic groaned in protest. I hated when you left, son. I hated it for you, and I hated it for us. You should have been here so I could watch you become the man you are today, Dash. But you let fear take that away from you, and you let fear keep that from the rest of us. It's up to you if you're going to let fear take even more from you. He reached out a hand and put it on my shoulder. Make good choices, son. That seemed to be his favorite bit of advice now that I was back home. I ground my teeth together, and when my voice made it past the lump in my throat, it sounded like sandpaper scraping over razors. I was scared. I was scared something was going to happen to you, to Dalen, to Elma. Everyone I ever cared about went away, and it really fucking hurt. I thought it would be easier if I was the one that went away. I took myself somewhere where things are always bad. So when shit went south, it wasn't a surprise. I didn't feel like my heart was getting ripped out of my chest because over there, I shook my head. Bad is all you know. I sighed and lifted up a hand so that the moonlight made my skin glow. There was always a light in the darkness if you opened your eyes and looked for it. It took longer than I would have liked, but you're finding your way to where you need to be, son. I was, but that was only because one perky redhead had burst into my life and lit the way. I threw my head back, not thinking about the fact I was still on two legs of the chair, and gave a surprised shout as the entire thing started to topple backwards. The sky swirled starry and black before my eyes as I braced for the impact of my head hitting the hard wooden surface of the deck. But my fall was halted, mid-crash, by a strong hand on the back of the chair. Like it and I weighed nothing, Jules latched onto the back slats of the chair and hauled me back to a seated position. I looked at him out of the corner of my eye and watched as he bent down to pick up his cigar. Thanks, Dad. The man had never let me down, never let me fall, and he refused to let me be less than the man he'd raised me to be. It had taken almost 30 years, two moms, a little brother, and realizing that even though I didn't want to and was terrified of it, I was falling in love with a girl that I didn't want to hurt more than I wanted to protect myself to get the words out of me. With him, I'd never had to earn the title of son. I was a real asshole for ever making him feel like he needed to earn the title dad. It was who he had been the minute he entered my life. The cigar quirked between his lips, and in true Jules fashion, even though what had just happened was monumental and life-changing, he acted like it was no big deal. Anytime. Sometimes you gotta let your kids fall and remind them that you'll be there to pick them up. And sometimes you gotta step in and keep them from hitting the ground in the first place. There was one fall he couldn't prevent or help me up from. That was the fall that had started when I walked into the bar and felt the warmth of the sun after what felt like a lifetime spent in the frigid cold. Slipping, sliding, skidding, tripping, tumbling. Flailing, falling into love with Dixie Carmichael.
Chapter 17. Dixie. I was surprised that I was up and ready to go before church the next morning. I felt him leave the bed sometime last night, but hadn't awoken when he returned. It was the best feeling in the world to wake up sheltered in his arms, wrapped up in his strength, like he didn't have any intention of letting me go. The feeling was quickly chased away by the disappointment that all too soon, he wasn't going to simply let me go. He was going to push me away. Not wanting to wake him, I took my time sliding out of his grasp, and almost couldn't make a clean escape, because the more I moved, the more his hand tangled in my hair where it was caught. He mumbled something in his sleep, and eventually rolled to his side. His normally fierce expression softened in sleep, making him look almost approachable. Almost. I snagged a pair of jeans and a tank top from my meager wardrobe and tiptoed into the bathroom to get dressed and tame my hair for the day. I could hear the other Churchill men up and about when I was done brushing my teeth, so I wandered into the kitchen, where the sounds of masculine chatter and early morning preparations for the day were coming from. Jules was at the stove flipping pancakes and telling a sullen-looking Dalen that there was no time like the present for him to learn that actions, no matter how insignificant they may seem, all had consequences. Dalen was grumbling under his breath about how the game this weekend was vital to the team, and Jules flatly informed him that next time he decided to skip school, he might want to consider who else he would be letting down if he got caught breaking the rules. I took a seat at the counter on one of the high-back stools next to Church's younger brother and gave him a sympathetic look. His eyes were a startling shade of purple with a halo of yellow and green on the outside. The cut in his lip had scabbed over, but the skin around it was still red and angry-looking. The scrape on the side of his head looked sore, and the bandage he had slapped over it was doing little to camouflage the damage. I bumped his shoulder with my own and gave him an ouch. He returned with a lopsided grin that made him wince.
Yeah, getting out of bed this morning wasn't any fun, but Dad is still insisting we meet with the coach and the principal.
He narrowed his eyes at his dad's back and pouted with pure teenaged ire. It made me laugh and had Jules turning to look at me over his shoulder with a knowing grin.
Dash said you aren't typically an early riser, so I only made enough for the human garbage disposal sitting next to you. But I can whip up a couple more if you're hungry.
I shook my head, but gladly took the mug of coffee Dalen poured for me and pushed my way. I think I'll go and see if Elma needs help with breakfast. She has her first physical therapy session today, and I want to be around for moral support. Dalen lifted an eyebrow at me, and then groaned when the action pulled at his bruised face.
You're like a cheerleader for things that happen in real life.
My lips twitched as I lifted the mug up and took a sip. Sometimes the day-to-day things are the hardest. We take being able to do them without struggle for granted. I'm happy to offer a little bit of encouragement when it's needed. Jules turned around and placed a stack of pancakes in front of Dalen that had my jaw dropping open. It looked like something that would be on one of those outrageous eating competition shows. But Dalen dug in like this was an everyday occurrence, and not a meal fit to feed the entire offensive line of the Denver Broncos.
I'm sure Elma will appreciate the company, but you should wait until Dash is awake to take you over there. He gave me a heads up that your recent troubles might be an overly amorous suitor. I put calls in to see what we have on them in the system, but until we hear back, you should probably avoid being out in the wild alone.
I stiffened and looked at him over the top of the coffee. Okay. Jules nodded and lifted his hands so that he could smooth his fingers over either side of his goatee.
Elma's had a pretty rough go of it here in the last few weeks, and she was looking at a long road to recovery. I hate to ask, but if you can avoid mentioning that things are a little bit unpredictable right now, I would appreciate it. She spent the last 10 years worrying herself sick over my stubborn son. I'd like her to be able to focus on getting better, and not the fact trouble followed the boy home.
I set the coffee mug down on the counter and rested my chin in the hand of the arm that had my elbow propped up on the surface. I won't go into details, but she's sharp as a tack. She told me yesterday that she knew something wasn't right, and she saw Dalen's face last night. It's pretty obvious things haven't been smooth sailing since Church and I got to town.
She'd be fit to be tied if she knew someone was after you, and that they were willing to hurt my boys to get at you. She's wanted Dash home since the minute he left. She's also wanted that boy to find his happy since we lost his mom. And let's be honest, Curly Sue, you're probably the best shot he's got at it.
I blinked at the older man and had to take a second to find my breath. I wanted to be Church's happy forever. Not just as happy for now. But he hadn't given me a single sign he was on the same page as I was. Well, he deserves some happiness. You all do, after everything you've been through. I'm glad I can give him a little bit of it while we're together. Jules braced himself on the counter across from me, with his arms crossed over his uniform chest. His dark eyebrows quirked upwards, and his mouth tugged into that grin that had to break hearts from miles away.
I think it's easy for folks to forget that sometimes it's far harder to have a smile ready than it is to find a frown. You should find your happy too, Dixie girl.
The man was far too perceptive for my own good. I am happy. And I was most days. It was the days when I got swallowed up by everyone else's wants and needs and forgot to focus on my own that I felt like I was missing out on a little something. I was a caretaker by nature, but the care I allowed for myself often paled in comparison to that which I offered others. I have a lot to be thankful for, and I get to have a hand in making sure that the people I care the most about are living their best lives. There isn't much more to happiness for me than that. Sure, I would be elated to finally have the dreams I'd been hoarding for a lifetime come true. But just like I couldn't be Church's reason to find his happy, I couldn't hold him accountable for mine. I was going to have to go out and live my best life without him, even if I wasn't sure that was possible. Even before we were romantically involved, my heart had beat stronger, my soul had shined brighter, and my life had been more full and interesting simply by having him in it. Once he was gone, I knew there were going to be a lot of stormy days in my future. But the truth was, the rain was never able to stop the sun from shining for very long.
Enough of this boring grown-up talk. I'm gonna have to sit through hours of lectures and real talk once the coach gets his hands on me. Can we go so I can get it over with?
Dalen's surly tone broke the somber mood between his father and me, so it seemed like a perfect way to end the conversation. I grabbed my phone and some shoes from the bedroom. Surprised, Church was still out like a light. I was leaning over to give him a kiss on that tempting mouth when his eyes popped open, and I found myself lost in a swirling labyrinth of color and confusion. Those eyes weren't dark and haunted first thing in the morning. They blazed with a million emotions I couldn't name, and a few that I wanted so desperately to be something he hadn't even hinted at.
Morning.
His eyelids fluttered slightly, and all the muscles in his chest stretched and flexed as he lifted his arms above his head. The sight made my mouth water and had me pondering putting our visit to Alma May on the back burner when Church's phone rang from somewhere off to the side of the bed. I lowered my lips to his shoulder as he swiped the screen and put the device to his ear. I let my fingers trip and tickle across his smooth skin with a grin as he lifted an eyebrow and gave me a warning look. I had my mind on payback until he stiffened and reached up a hand to push my hair off my face with a shake of his head.
Is she okay?
I went still at his question and frowned as a serious look pulled tight across his features.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll be over.
He tossed the phone onto the bed and swung his long legs over the side. Is everything okay? He looked down at me as he snatched up a pair of jeans and shoved his long legs into them.
That was Elma's home care nurse. Apparently she fell this morning in the bathroom. She's refusing to go back to the doctor. The nurse asked me to come over and talk to her.
Oh no. The words whispered worriedly between us. I was worried about Elma, but in all honesty, I was more worried about Church. He wouldn't take something happening to the older woman well. He would see it as more evidence that every time he let someone get close, something bad worked its way in to harm them. Well, I'm the new guy, so I have no problem going head to head with her if it's for her own good. I could do tough love for the cause, because it was still love, and that was sort of my specialty.
The nurse said she's in a mood, so you can stay here if you want. I got this.
I reached out a hand and put it on the center of his back as he sat down on the edge of the bed in order to tug his boots on. I know you have this, but I'm here and I want to help you with it. He looked at me over his shoulder and the corners of his lips twitched as he reached around to snag my wrist so that he could pull me flush against his warm skin.
Always trying to fix everything, aren't you, pretty girl?
I gulped a little and kissed his shoulder again. I mean, I have to try.
No, you don't. But you always do. That makes you something pretty special, Dixie.
He let me go and bent over so he could snag a shirt off the floor.
You can come with me, but Elma is stubborn. So if she's in a mood, I might have to pick her up and put her in the car and force her to go see the doctor if she's hurt.
I cleared my throat and slid off the bed. You'll take care of her. That's what you do. And that's what makes you special, Church. We walked up the block and around the corner hand in hand. We didn't say much, but he never did, and the fact he had his fingers wrapped around mine felt like it said a whole lot more than words would anyways. His eyes never stopped shifting over the area around us. There were obvious lines of tension in the set of his shoulders and in the turn of his mouth. It was like he was waiting for the other shoe to drop, or for whoever had been terrorizing us since we left Denver to jump out of one of the perfectly maintained rose bushes that lined the neighbor's yard. His alertness made me anxious and had me craning my neck to make sure danger wasn't lurking as we rounded the corner and started up Elma's driveway. The nurse's plain economy car was parked in front, and the big white door leading into the home was open. The screen door was still shut, and the sound of Elma's TV could be heard well before we reached the porch. I went to run up the stairs like I always did, but Church threw out a hand and gently shoved me behind him as he took the steps one at a time. He was always doing that. He put me first in bed. He put me first when it came to the idea and thought of me getting what he thought I justly deserved. He put me first when it came to my comfort and well-being, and he put me first when it came to my safety and security, by putting himself between me and whatever line of fire might be in front of us. I could take care of myself, but around him I didn't have to, because he always stepped up to take care of me. Somewhere along the line on this wacky journey he'd convinced me to take with him, his need to protect and defend felt less like an obligation and more like an honor that he was more than happy to have the responsibility for. He rapped his knuckles on the frame of the screen and called Elma's name. There wasn't a response for a long minute, which made him frown.
"Do you think she can't hear me over the TV?"
I shrugged and reached around him to tug open the door. "She might be in a lot of pain if she fell hard. Her nurse probably gave her some medication to help with that. Maybe it finally kicked in and she's down for the count. That will make kidnapping her and hauling her back to the hospital easier, if that's the route you decide to go with." He gave me a narrow-eyed look as he pushed into the house, me close on his heels.
"Not funny, pretty girl."
It wasn't, but I hated the idea of Elma hurting as much as I hated the idea of him hurting, because someone else he cared about had fallen to that bad that hung around, heavy and dark like a stormy day. I was opening my mouth to shout for the nurse when suddenly there was a crack that sounded like 1,000 firecrackers going off. One second I was standing behind Church in the entrance of Elma's stately and romantic house, and the next I was being shoved bodily through the screen door without it being opened. Another crack ripped through the air, and I heard him swear as he pushed my head down and continued to shove me through mesh and out of the house. I heard him grunt in pain and swear as he yelled at me to run, his hands hard on my shoulders, as he kept pushing me farther and farther away from the deafening pops and pings that I belatedly realized were gunshots. I tumbled and landed on my hands and knees at the bottom of the porch steps. The gravel of the driveway slit the skin of my hands open as I screamed at Church when I realized he was still standing on the porch. He had one hand wrapped around the opposite bicep as crimson oozed fast and thick through his fingers. "What?" I didn't even get the rest of the question out before Church fell back a step as the tattered and torn screen door was kicked open and a squirming, swearing Elma May was wrenched through it, clasped in the arms of a man that I recognized immediately. He looked different. Insanity and fury did that to a man. It twisted features and erased any traces of humanity that might have been there before. Elma had a nasty-looking black eye that she hadn't the day before, and it was clear she'd been fighting for a while, but her already damaged and frail body was no match for the irrational strength that came with crazy. Joseph had a small black pistol in his hand, and it was aimed right at the center of Church's chest. Even with the distance separating us, I could see his finger twitch on the trigger as he grappled with a white-haired Tasmanian devil in his grasp. "He hurt Dharma." Elma's voice broke as she spoke to Church. "He made her call you, and then he hit her in the head with his gun. She's bleeding bad." Elma sounded as angry as Joseph looked as his wild-eyed gaze shifted between the two of us.
"She was supposed to tell you to come alone. She didn't. She was supposed to tell you the old bitch didn't want Dixie here. She didn't do that either."
His gaze drifted past Church and landed on me.
"I need you out of the way. You're standing between me and what's rightfully mine." "The fuck?"
Church growled the words and went to take a step forward, but the gun wavered and switched from being pointed right at him to resting threateningly against Elma's temple. That had Church going stone still, and the older woman's eyes popping open wide. I sucked in a shaky breath and climbed to my feet. I wiped my bleeding palms on my jeans and cleared my throat, so that Joseph's attention would shift to me and off the two people standing between us. "This is a bad idea, Joe." I hoped keeping my tone calm and using the name I used when I thought I was chatting him up online would lower his guard, and make him more susceptible to suggestion. Someone is going to report those gunshots. Church's dad is a cop. Alma May is their family. This is not going to end well for you.
It's not going to end well for them!
His voice was shrill, and the gun pressed harder into Alma's temple. She cried out in pain, and Church couldn't stop himself from taking another step forward. The gun jerked away from Alma's head, and once again ended up pointed right at Church.
Someone is always standing in the way of what I want. Someone is always getting what should be mine. At work, at home, I'm always coming in second best. Except with you, Dixie. You were the only one that saw how special I could be, how great I could be. You saw the best in me. I just needed a chance.
The gun wavered a little, and I screamed as I saw his finger move on the trigger. The gunshot was louder now without the walls of the house to muffle it, but nothing was as loud as the scream that ripped out of me as the bullet hit its target and sent Church to his knees in front of me. Alma May shrieked just as loudly as I did, but her sound was cut off as she was flung to the side, collapsing in the same position I had as I hit the ground. Joseph stalked to where Church was still kneeling, blood now flowing freely down his arm and soaking into his shirt as his big body listed to the side. He lifted a hand to his shoulder, and I could see him tilt his head back so that he was looking Joseph in the eyes as the other man loomed over him, the gun now focused right in Church's face.
You're in the way of what I want. She was nice to me. She was sweet to me. She liked me, and then you showed up and took her away.
That wasn't exactly how it all went down, but I didn't think there was going to be a lot of reasoning with him. If you keep hurting Church and the other people I care about, I'm not going to be nice anymore, Joseph. This has to stop. His gaze shifted from Church, who was growling low in his throat and breathing hard. He was hurt, but he was also pissed off. I could practically see the wheels turning in his handsome head. He was going to take this all on himself. He was going to think that we were just getting good, and bad had wasted no time getting between us. He was going to think this was his bad, even though it was clear it was all mine.
I just want things to go my way one time. I want to be a winner for once.
He sounded whiny and pitiful, which was totally at odds with the firearm pointed at the man I loved. I sucked in a breath so hard that it whistled between my teeth. I put my raw hand to my throat and did what I always did. I tried to fix things. Leave Alma and Church alone, and I'll go with you wherever you want, Joe. Church's head whipped around so fast, I was pretty sure he was going to get whiplash.
You aren't going any fucking where, Dixie.
The words were bit out and filled with fury. I refused to look at him, because that was a lot of anger and a lot of frustrated man between me and my objective. I knew he would hate it, but I didn't see any other option. He was shot and Alma was hurt. I didn't know if anyone had called the police, and I refused to be the reason anyone I loved was hurt. Joe tilted his head and considered me.
They're going to come after us.
That was the sanest thing he'd said since the first gunshot was fired. I put my hands up in front of me and prayed my voice didn't shake the way the rest of me was. I'll tell them I left with you. I'll tell them I picked you. His wild eyes widened even more, and he looked down at Alma, who was growing increasingly pale.
I hurt people. They won't like it.
He sounded like a toddler, and I assumed the they he was referring to was the police. I'll tell them it was all Church. I'll tell them he tried to take me from you, and I didn't want to go. I'll tell them you hurt people, protecting me. I sounded desperate and frantic, because I was. Church's eyes shot daggers of warning at me. I could feel them prick my skin and stab into my soul, but I refused to look at him. I didn't want to lose Joseph's attention. He considered me for a second and cocked his head to the side before stating,
"That might work."
I exhaled slowly and told myself to stay steady. I could do this. I could fix it. It'll work, but you have to trust me, and we have to go right now. The gun wobbled a little, and his eyes shifted back to Church, and then slid over to Alma.
They'll be able to tell the truth.
Shit. He had far better reasoning skills than I expected for a lunatic. But they won't. They just want me to be happy, and if you leave with me, then I'll be happy.
Dixie.
My name had never held so much meaning as it did when it was ripped out of Church's broad and bleeding chest. He would die before he let me go, and it was my job to keep him alive at all costs. Joe, Church and I aren't real. This is all just a fantasy. He was never in your way. He told his family that the reason he couldn't go home was because of a girl. It was a lie. And when he had to come home, he asked me to pretend to be that girl. He'll let me go because I'm not his to hold on to. I told Church I didn't want him to be a liar, and here I was spinning falsehood upon falsehood. Joseph continued to look at Church and at Elma, but somewhere in the distance sirens started to wail, indicating that someone had reported the gunshots. We were running out of time, and apparently my psycho online date knew it.
You're gonna go with me.
He said it instead of asking it, and instead of trying to get through Church to get to me, he walked over by where Elma was still lying, unmoving and crumpled on the ground, and vaulted over the railing on the porch, which landed him in Elma's flowers. She was going to be good and pissed when she could do something about that, but at the moment all she could do was weakly lift her head and look at me with pleading eyes. Joseph was at my side in an instant. His hand was clammy and shaking as it wrapped around my elbow. The gun in his hand dug into my side as he shoved me towards the sedan in the driveway. Once I got closer, I realized the keys were in the ignition and the driver's door was still slightly ajar. He'd grabbed the nurse when she'd been either coming or going and used her as leverage to get into Elma's home. He was going to shoot Church as soon as he opened the door, but the man was a terrible shot. Something I hoped would work in my soldier's favor.
You drive.
He put a hand on my head and tried to shove me into the car. With his hand on the top of my head and sirens screaming as they got closer and closer, I let my eyes meet Church's as he lumbered to his feet and started towards the car. Hey, Church. I whispered the words, not sure that he would hear them over the pounding of my heart and across the distance that separated us. You know I love you, right? I'd never tried to hide it, but I had to tell him if this was the only chance I was going to get.
You don't get to do that, Dixie. You don't get to give me that when you're risking your neck like a little fool and telling lies.
He sounded so angry and so hurt that it hurt worse than the crack of the gun across the top of my head as Joseph freaked out at my words and hit me. I let out a strangled laugh and closed my eyes briefly. You've always had it. I gave it to you forever ago. You just didn't know it.
Get in the car, Dixie.
I did as I was told and folded into the seat. The car was a few years old and needed an oil change, but it started right up. I pulled out of the driveway, watching Church with wide eyes the entire time. Alone in the car with the only person I'd ever met who actually wanted to harm me, I told him exactly what was on my mind. I felt like there wasn't much left to lose. Your mom was overbearing and has obvious control issues. If you want to meet a girl and have something special, I would suggest you leave her at home next time. I cut him a look from the corner of my eye and noticed that he was turning an alarming shade of red. His cheeks were billowing in and out, like he was having trouble catching his breath.
She yelled at me.
The gun swung in an arc and ended up pointed at the side of my head.
She hit me. She always hits. Ever since I was little, she told me I would never be a man, that I would never have what it took to satisfy a woman. She burned me with an iron.
He pulled up the sleeve of his arm and showed me a nasty burn that looked like it was still healing.
Then she told me I was worthless and that I would never give her grandchildren.
He started to laugh, hysterical, shrill peals of laughter that hurt my ears and made my skin crawl.
Well, I finally had enough. I finally fought back. So you don't have to worry about Mother or her hurting our children anymore. She got what she deserved.
I cringed and swallowed back a scream. He tried to hire someone to kill Church, so I shouldn't be surprised that he was capable of taking a life and sounding so cavalier about it. What really had my skin tightening and my brain buzzing was the fact that he was talking about me being the mother of his children. That didn't bode well for me and whatever future plans he had in mind. I blew out a breath and lifted my eyes to the rearview mirror. I had to trap a shout behind clamped down lips. Then, out of nowhere, a white car with twirling red and blue lights was trailing behind us, dropping in and out of sight, but there nonetheless. I tried to sacrifice myself for the greater good, but the greater good wasn't going to let me go that easily. I couldn't stem the flow of tears that spilled over my lashes and ran freely down my face. I'm a nice person, Joseph. I like everyone I encounter, and chances are if you had asked, I would have gone on a second date with you, because I always give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Don't do something you can't take back. Don't kill me like you killed your mother. Don't hurt me like you hurt Elma and her nurse. Don't shoot me like you shot Church. I couldn't even get my head around the thought, and my heart refused to believe that fate would force Church to attend another funeral of a woman that mattered to him. Nothing in this life could be that cruel. My captor's eyes went flat. There was no emotion, no regret or fear. There was nothing there but chilling intent and cold-blooded resolve.
I don't regret anything. You're the one, Dixie.
A broken laugh burst out of me as I lifted my hand to wipe my face. All I did was smear moisture around and show Joseph how badly I was shaking. I'd always wanted to be the one. It was my one wish. It looked like I should have been more specific when I was tossing my pennies into the well. I wanted to be the one for the person that was the one for me, not for a lunatic with mayhem and murder on his mind. If I made it out of this alive, there was no way I was going to let the man that was my one get away, or let him send me away.
Chapter 18. Church. Hey, Church, you know I love you, right? There was no stopping my fall after that. My knees hit the ground. My head fell forward on my neck, and my heart turned itself inside out. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see past the haze of everything I had to lose, suffocating me and pulling me under. I don't know how the words escaped, but I managed to tell her, "You don't get to do that, Dixie. You don't get to give me that when you're risking your neck like a little fool." She laughed, but it was sadder than anything I'd ever heard in my life. It was so final, so fatalistic, when she whispered the damning truth and gave me a goodbye I was bound and determined to obey. "You've always had it." Then she was gone, and there was no getting her back. I let out a roar that was inhuman and dragged my bloodied, battered body down the driveway, even though there was no way in hell I could catch up to the car that squealed away with my entire life inside of it. I fell to my knees again, leveled by emotion and hammered by pain, none of it coming from the graze across my arm or the jagged hole that burned right under my collarbone. I'd taken a bullet before. It never felt good, but I knew enough and had been wounded enough while I was overseas to know that while these injuries hurt like a bitch, they wouldn't be the end of me. I felt a heavy hand land on my shoulder and looked up at my dad through eyes that wouldn't focus. My lungs were burning, and my mouth felt like it was full of acid and bile. He handed me something that looked like a spare t-shirt and ordered, "Put that on your shoulder and get your ass up. Let's go get your girl, son." I barely heard him. I was too lost in my own spiral of panic and remorse. I wanted to go back and do it all over again. I wanted to leave Dixie at home so that she was never in danger in the first place. I wanted to take her to bed the first time she gave me the opportunity, so that I could tell her with my body what I didn't have the words to say. I wanted to make sure she knew that if I could love her, I would. I had forgotten how, but I was willing to learn for her and because of her. She made me want to face my biggest fear. She was the only woman that made me want to take that risk. I wanted to wake up with her in my arms every single morning, and I wanted to spend all day, every day, making sure she knew that she came first. She was the sun in my sky, and if something happened to her, There was absolutely no way that anything would ever get the chance to flourish and grow in the soul she had been cultivating and nurturing from the moment we met. In fact, all that rich and fertile soil that she had been tilling and digging her way through would go back to ash and dust if anything happened to her. I would be barren and desolate, like I had been before her bright light found its way into all my dark places. If anything happens to her, I trailed off and allowed Jules to haul me up to my feet. We're gonna make sure nothing happens to her, Dash. I winced in pain that had nothing to do with the bleeding hole in my shoulder. I wish I could believe that, Dad. Our track record isn't so great in that department. I followed him to his cruiser, all while he was shouting orders and rallying the troops, and we hit the doors at a run and peeled out into the street and after the speeding sedan. Jules tossed his radio at me and ordered me to relay every twist and turn we took as we followed. I knew he was trying to make me feel productive and helpful in the pursuit, but all I could feel was panic and fear threatening to choke me. She'd sacrificed herself for me, for Elma. She took care of me when it was my job to take care of her. She would give up everything for the little bit of good we'd had together. We might not have a winning track record when it comes to keeping them, but we're undefeated when it comes to finding the best women to make a life with. I think the big guy upstairs owes us a solid, son. Keep your head in the game. I was trying to, but I felt like I was getting sucked into a black vortex that was filled with familiar pain and hopelessness. She told me she loves me. The words ripped out of my chest. It couldn't be the last thing she ever said to me. Not without me being able to give that back to her. I needed to give that to her, regardless of what happened between us in the future. She loves me. And I was so fucking worried about Elma falling that I didn't stop and grab my gun when we left the house. I knew trouble was brewing, and I dropped the ball. I felt my head fall forward as pain and blood loss started to zap some of my energy. She loved me, and she very well could die because of it. I think that love has been pretty clear from the start. I don't think she would have agreed to come here to hold your hand as you found your way back if she didn't love you. And just in case you keep wanting to be stubborn, it's obvious you love her too. I sighed and told him to pick up the pace and turn once we hit the long, flat stretches of rough road that led out of town and towards the more rural parts of the county. It was obvious neither Dixie nor the guy holding the gun on her had any idea where they were going. The poorly marked roads that seemed to go on forever were causing them to double back and speed haphazardly along roads that went nowhere. How could you know I love her before I did? I wanted to kick myself and take back every second I'd spent pushing her away. That was familiar regret, and I couldn't believe I wasn't smart enough to learn my lessons from the first time I had done that with a woman that brought nothing but sunshine and light into my life. Looks like they're making a U-turn and they're headed back towards the main road. They're going too fast. All that gravel and unfamiliar roads. I trailed off, worried Dixie was going to lose control and flip the car. We're going to block them in. We'll be at the junction at Route 9 in a few minutes. He's not going anywhere with her. The sirens wailed overhead as the car flew so fast over the road that it didn't even seem like the wheels were touching the ground. I'd never been so happy that the man that raised me came with a badge and a gun before. He cut me a look and went from cop to parent in the blink of an eye as he told me, "I knew you loved her because you introduced her to your family. I knew you loved her because you stayed in Denver for her, even if you had other reasons for lying low. I'm not a fool. As soon as I saw you with her, I knew she was your main reason. I know you love her, because instead of running from whatever it is waiting for you when we get to her, you're right here running towards it. You might be scared she's going to get hurt, But your love for that girl is stronger than your fear, Dash. I couldn't think of a response to any of it because he was right. Even though I'd let fear steal time and important moments with my family away, they were still the most important people in my world. And as much as I liked Denver, the Delta was always calling me home. I'd stayed longer than I'd planned because of her. I wasn't ready to go back to gray days and frigid nights alone without her in my life. He was also spot on about the fact I couldn't get to her and the danger she was in fast enough. I understood that she was in the hands of a madman, that her fate was being held in the hands of a lunatic, and there was nothing I could do about it. But instead of losing control and running from the very real possibility that I might lose her, I was racing towards whatever may come, so that any time we had left together wasn't wasted. I would fight for Dixie until the bitter end. There was no giving up on her, even if forever wasn't a guarantee. We watched in silent horror as the older car started to fishtail and lose traction. It screeched from one side of the road to the other, a cloud of dust swallowing it up. When it came back into sight, the vehicle was bearing down on the fleet of police cars thundering towards it. "Doesn't look like he's letting her take her foot off the gas or pull over and surrender." They were blurry through both windshields and the smoke screen of road debris that the tires were kicking up. But I could see the stark look of terror on Dixie's face and the gun that was pointed at the side of her head. Jules nodded, and his hands tightened on the steering wheel until his knuckles turned white. "He's not going anywhere." My phone rang, and I was jerked out of my pensive thoughts. It was such a normal thing in a situation that was not that it took me a minute to juggle the device and get a finger free to swipe across the screen. I winced when I noticed I smeared blood across the glass when I hit the speaker function. It was a blatant reminder of the kind of violence the man who had my girl was capable of. "Not a good time, Royal. Let me call you back." I'd asked the gorgeous lady cop to check out all of Dixie's online dates, but I already knew the culprit was Joseph, thanks to Dixie calling his name out when he threatened her with the gun.
"Is that a siren?"
She sounded alarmed, but I didn't have time to reassure her everything was okay. "In the middle of something. Like I said, now isn't a good time." I barked the words at her far more harshly than I meant to.
"Okay, well, I'll talk fast because you need to hear what I have to say."
She took a deep breath, and then words erupted out of her so fast I could hardly keep up.
"All the guys on the list you gave me checked out except for Erickson."
I grunted, because she wasn't telling me anything I didn't already know.
"We can't locate him, but we did get a nasty surprise when we checked his home. There was a dead body inside the house, Church, an older woman that we've identified as Marie Erickson. It was bad, gruesome. If the son is the person behind this murder, you need to be careful, and you need to tell Dixie to be careful. This guy is unhinged."
"Fuck." I bit the word out and looked over at Jules. My dad's jaw was clenched, and a muscle was ticking rapid fire in his cheek. "Thanks for the heads up, Royal. I'll call with an update when I have one." When Joseph had talked about everyone keeping him from what he wanted, I had a suspicion he'd been referring to his mother. This news wasn't good, but it was far from unexpected at this point.
"Just tell me that you're in the front seat of that cop car and not the back."
She sounded like she was kidding, but I could hear genuine concern in her voice, which let me know she wanted some kind of real assurance that things were under control. They were far from it, but there was nothing she could do to help the situation from Colorado. "I'm sitting shotgun. My dad's a cop and we have a situation, but we're handling it. Chances are, I'll be able to hand Erickson over to you at the end of the day." She made a noise.
"Hand him over alive, Church."
That wasn't a promise I could make. "I'll be in touch." I knew it was at stake here, and there was no way I was going to be making a phone call to Dixie's family telling them she hadn't made it. I wasn't going to let some lonely, crazy person take her from us. This was a war I was determined to win. I'd lost enough battles when it came to love and loss in my life. I could hear the motor screaming over the noise of the sirens,
I felt my heart drop, and everything inside of me go still and on high alert. There's a convoy of cop cars behind us. Where does he think he's going to go? I put a hand on the dash as the distance between me and my girl grew smaller and smaller in a dangerous way. I don't think he's thinking. Look at Dixie. She's trying to tell him there's nowhere for them to go. Jules sounded tense as he bit the words out. Her mouth was moving, and her hands were curled around the steering wheel in a death grip. I could see the tear streaks on her face, and I wanted to reach through space and time so I could wipe them away and tell her everything was going to be okay. You need to stop. He's going to make her keep going. He has a finger on the trigger. He was waving the gun around wildly and screaming at Dixie. She flinched, but her eyes never left mine as the struggling sedan continued to thunder closer and closer. Think he's got every intention of running into us whether we're moving or not. Jules started to slow the cruiser down, but he was right. It was clear that he wasn't going to let Dixie take her foot off the pedal. In fact, as the car slowed, he jammed the gun so hard into the side of her temple that the action jerked her head to the side. I said her name even though she couldn't hear me, but she must have seen it because her lips twitched. She turned her head and looked at her captor. I couldn't make out what she said, but whatever it was, it pissed the guy off. The gun waved around some more, and then he held it in two hands as he pointed it right at her face. I screamed her name again as she turned back to look at me. The sedan picked up speed again as her eyes locked on mine. Her lips moved slowly and deliberately. She mouthed the words, "I love you," over and over again, as my heart stopped and my soul tried to jump out of my body to stop her from doing whatever it was she was going to do. I couldn't watch her sacrifice herself for me, even if that's what she had been doing from the get-go. "No!" I put my hands up and shook my head, but she kept repeating, "I love you," and I heard it like she was yelling even though there was silence. The cruiser rolled into position horizontally across the road, and I was out the door and on my feet, running towards the oncoming car before the wheels stopped. I vaguely heard Jules yelling my name, but all I could see was Dixie and her unfailing desire to save everyone but herself. "I love you!" I screamed the words back at her, but I had no clue if she heard or understood. Because the second the last word left my mouth, she cranked the wheel as hard as she could to the side, which sent the quickly moving car careening wildly to the side of the road. Traction was lost. The overtaxed motor whirred. Gravel and rocks kicked up and pelted me even though I didn't feel them. The front wheels hit the dip of the ditch, and all it took was momentum and gravity to send the big machine end over end. It felt like it flipped 1,000 times. The sound of metal crunching and glass breaking was deafening. The smell of fuel and rubber burned my nose. I was frozen to the spot in horror in the middle of the road as my worst nightmare played out before my eyes. She'd called me a hero, and yet again, I'd been unable to live up to the title. I couldn't save her when she was so desperate to save me and everyone else she thought she could help. She was the one who was a hero, and I almost hated her for it, but it was the fact I couldn't not love her that finally had my feet moving as my body had no choice but to follow my heart towards the woman that owned every piece of it.
Chapter 19. Dixie. I was flying. Sure, the car had left the road and a symphony of screaming metal and noisy mechanical parts pushed past their limits. But that wasn't why I was weightless and free, floating above everything bad happening in the front seat of the twisting, turning, flipping sedan. I was flying because Church loved me, and he was ready to let me love him. Even if a second was all we got to have of that love, it was enough. The light had pushed back the dark, and he was standing in the sun after lurking in the shadows for far too long. It was the only thing I wanted, and he had shown up to give it to me, in case it was the last thing I ever laid my eyes on. My last vision would be one of love and courage. It would be one of bravery and acceptance. It would be my dream coming true. I heard glass breaking all around me as I let go of the steering wheel and covered my face with both my hands. Joseph was still screaming next to me, calling me names, telling me he was going to kill me, yelling that after I was dead, he was going to make it his mission to kill everyone I loved. But then there was a sickening crunch as metal made contact with the ground, as we rolled over and over again. Joseph quit saying anything, and I felt something sharp rip through my clothing and skin at my shoulder. It was my turn to scream, as something below the dash broke loose and trapped my foot between the weight of it and the gas pedal. Joseph wanted me to keep going. He knew there was nowhere to run, not with the entire Lowry police force stretched out in front of us. He told me it was all my fault. Over and over again, he told me I should have given him a chance, that I shouldn't have been leading men on if I was in love with someone else. I tried to stay calm and reason with him. I tried to tell him that wasn't rational. He kept telling me to go faster, to keep my foot on the gas. He jammed the gun into the side of my head so hard I saw stars, and I panicked, thinking that he was going to pull the trigger by accident. There was no way in hell I was going to let him murder me in front of church. I wasn't going to be another slash across church's barely stitched together heart. I refused to let him blame himself for the misfortune befalling yet another woman he cared about. It wasn't his fault. None of it had been. And now that he could see that, I wouldn't let him drift back into the darkness. I told Church I loved him. I said it out loud over and over again. I repeated it what felt like 1,000 times, each word making Joseph angrier and angrier. His rage didn't matter. All that mattered was that I got to say what needed to be said. I saw Church run towards me. I could clearly see the fear and worry on his face. I told him I loved him and prayed that he could hear me. I watched with my heart in my eyes and determination coursing through every part of my body as he told me he loved me back. I didn't need him to give that to me, but I was overjoyed that he had. It made what I had to do next far easier than it would have been otherwise. Love was stronger than fear, and I felt that strength fill me up as I cranked the wheel of the speeding vehicle as far to the right as it would go. There was no hope for the sedan. It left the road and started to somersault instantly. The farm fence, meant to keep in livestock and trespassers out, was no match for the tumbling vehicle. My head was spinning. I could taste blood and dirt all across my tongue. There wasn't a single part of my body that didn't hurt, and I couldn't get my eyes to focus. Every breath I took burned, and it felt like there wasn't enough air. The world was upside down and sideways, but I figured I must still be alive if I could feel all the things that were wrong with me. I tried to turn my head to see if Joseph was still in the seat next to me, or more accurately, to see if there was still a weapon that could be pointed at me. But I screamed as white-hot pain scorched down the side of my neck when I tried to move. Dixie! I heard my name, but it didn't sound like it normally did. Church was screaming it, and it sounded like both a prayer and a curse. None of that smooth drawl was present. All I could hear was a frantic man worried about the woman he loved. He sounded tortured and stripped bare. It was his soul screaming out in search of mine. But I couldn't answer. I tried to, but I couldn't make my muscles work. I couldn't get my tongue unstuck from the roof of my mouth, and I couldn't speak around the tang of blood at the back of my throat. Luckily, I didn't need to, because within seconds that familiar face with those remarkable eyes, twice their normal size and flooded with fear, were hovering in front of me. He was upside down, but I could make out the lines of worry and concern on his face as he reached into the mangled side of the car and put his fingers on the side of my neck. I had a pulse. I must have. I could hear my heart pounding between my ears, and every thump of it made my chest ache with pain. I tried to blink heavy lashes so I could give him some indication that I was okay. But even that feat proved to be too challenging. I couldn't make anything cooperate.
She's got a pulse, but it's thready. She's bleeding all over the damn place. And there's a piece of the goddamn fence sticking out of her shoulder. Don't move her until EMS gets here. They're 2 minutes out.
I heard Jules like he was speaking through heavy fabric. I could see his legs somewhere beyond where Church was kneeling and holding onto my face with his hands.
I've got you, pretty girl.
He did have me, and now it seemed like he wanted to keep me.
Where's Erickson? He isn't next to her. He must have been thrown clear when they rolled.
Joseph Hatton had a seatbelt on. That and one too many Jason Statham movies had given me the idea to drive the car off the road. I figured if either of us was going to survive, I was the one with a better shot since I'd buckled up. It sounded like my instinct had proven to be correct. Not that surviving felt all that awesome at the moment.
Hurts.
The word wheezed out as I lifted my hand that wasn't pinned to the crushed seat behind me towards my shoulder. Church caught the unnaturally pale and weak appendage in his own hand and gently pulled it away from the razor-sharp glass that was embedded in my flesh.
I know it does, but you can't touch it.
He curled his fingers around mine and gave them a little squeeze.
You stole about 100 years off my life, you know that?
He shook his head and leaned forward so that he could touch his lips to mine. It was upside down and too brief, but I swore the touch of his lips against mine stole away some of the pain that was making it hard to think.
I already lost 10 years. I don't want to lose any more.
That was good, but I was having a really difficult time keeping my eyes open. I was seeing three of him, and all of those versions were fuzzy around the edges. I heard voices, all talking fast and loud. I heard Church grumbling when I tried to protest, when his face was replaced by one I didn't recognize. But I was too tired to argue, and the pain was getting to be too much to fight. I could feel oblivion trying to suck me under, and its embrace was warm and welcoming.
Her foot is caught under the dash. It's probably got some significant damage. We need a machine in here to cut her loose.
I heard Church order them to be careful with me, but one of the paramedics jostled my side as he tried to make room for himself next to me so he could get to my captured foot. It wasn't a big bump, but it was enough to make me scream like I'd never screamed before. I felt like lightning was ripping through every limb. I saw stars, but they were blinking rapidly in a field of black, and that darkness was calling to me, promising me relief from the searing agony that was pulling my body apart. I heard other voices yell. I heard a loud pop and smelled gunpowder, as well as the blood and gasoline that I was choking on. Then everything went black, and I finally stopped hurting.
Chapter 20. Church. I was going to pull the paramedic that made